Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. How to explain Donald Trump's behavior? Why did he agree to a war on Iran when his own intelligence community was against it? Why is he attacking traditional political allies? What did the Pope ever do to Trump? This is a presidency spiraling downward and out of control. Crosstalking the Trump presidency, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He's a legal and media analyst. In Rio, we have Nico House. He is a political analyst, founder of Hotspot Media, and host of For the People podcast. And in Prague, we cross to Jason Zahadas. He is an independent journalist and geopolitical analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. My old long-term friend, Lionel, and very often a reality check for many, many issues. So the first question of my intro was, what explains Donald Trump's very odd, bizarre behavior as of late? Go ahead.
Peter, I'm gonna say something I never say. I don't know. And I know you're not supposed to say this. I don't know. Let me say something, not as a representative of any country, not as any particular member of any party, but as somebody who knows a little bit about how people live and work here in the fishbowl. You can, and I don't mean to be disparaging of the American voter, you can talk a lot about arcane issues, the Strait of Hormuz and Houthis and not that that's unimportant, but that involves a little heavy lifting, a little geographical reference. But when you, for example, put up a tweet or a message that is perceived as either mocking Jesus or mocking the spiritual leader of about 1.5 billion people. And by the way, as you know, there's this resurgence now of younger people in particular embracing the Catholic Church. You have to ask yourself, this is an unforced error.
Yeah.
This is unnecessary. And this people will understand because it's a meme. You're asking what's going on. And that is the worst thing. If you're going to ever do something of controversy, have it be something rather arcane and recondite geopolitically. But this cuts right to the core. This is again an own goal, unforced error, unnecessary. This will sting longer than any political move. Any geopolitical move you can imagine.
Yeah, because Nico, I mean, you know, it's not as if we're not surprised by very strange reactions. And I mean, Rosie O'Donnell, and remember that during the 2016 campaign. So we're used to kind of odd zingers, and in it's embarrassing, but you even kind of chuckle sometimes. This is of a totally different magnitude. I mean, showing yourself to be Jesus and healing the sick. I mean, that really cuts too close. It does cut to the bone. I mean, I am nominally a Catholic, but I looked at that and I thought, you must be out of your mind. And to praise it.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, I mean, is this a reaction? Is this a way to change the subject? And if it is, it's a disastrous way to do it. Nico.
No, I don't think there was any strategy involved in this decision. I think it was Trump being Trump. I think this is the definition of drinking your own Kool-Aid because he initially had such a mandate given to him by his base at the beginning of this election and really towards the end of his administration
but Nico,
last time.
His base, there's a lot of Catholics in his base.
Exactly, which is why I said there was no strategy involved. This was a tit for tat. It was, this came right after the criticism of the Iran war and the request of de-escalation by the Pope, after the Pope rejected, even speaking or talking to J.D. Vance. And I think that this is his way of trying to use a meme to get back at the Pope and saying, look, I'm your Jesus. Whatever I say goes. And it's even more sickening when you consider that he's obviously portraying himself as Jesus, not only offending his base, but entertaining this irony of like healing the sick when we know he is unnecessarily bombing the innocent, especially when it comes to the case of Iran. So the idea that he could portray himself as Jesus gives us a little bit of an insight into how he sees himself and the amount of sycophants he's put in his administration, because nobody told him this was a horrible idea, and no one is even coming out and criticizing him for doing so and telling him, like, hey, you need to renege, you need to come out and apologize. No, he has a bunch of sycophants surrounding him, and ultimately it will be the demise of his already abysmal administration.
Jason, the Streisand effect is in play here, because Pope Leo, he's relatively new on the job, and he's gotten all of this global attention because he's in this kind of mock battle with Donald Trump. You know, what the Pope had to say about war is what we would expect the pontiff to say. It wasn't revolutionary or anything like that. And it became a target for Donald Trump, saying that he had him elected. Because of Trump, he became Pope. Well, it doesn't really work that way. So, I mean, the Streisand effect is in play here. Pope Leo is turned into a global hero.
Well, I will say a major part of Trump's picking fights with people like Pope Leo and like Tucker Carlson is that, for one thing, he can't stand having his ego insulted. And then another thing, kind of to extrapolate from what Nico was saying, is he... Needs a distraction. Trump has put himself in a position where he caused a global economic crisis through what began as a war for regime change, turned into a war on energy, not just with Iran, but also with China. Because of the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, crude oil prices have soared to as high as $125. Americans are now paying $5 a gallon for gas, and that's before we get into the delays in shipments of fertilizer, sulfuric acid, and helium. These terminally online Twitter fights that he is picking with Tucker Carlson and with Pope Leo are meant to serve as a diversion after he launched a war of aggression that he could not win and had low public approval, and potentially doomed the West to years, if not a decade, of economic recession. And he's trying to use Iran as some kind of villain, as a means to rally what remains of his base after losing the core of MAGA, that being Midwestern blue-collar industrial workers. And that became very clear in the case of the Pope, where he repeated the same propagandistic line that the Iranian government killed 42,000 protesters, which, of course, has not been substantiated in any way and is a claim that has come from the most compromising groomed sources. Of course, what a lot of Americans don't know due to propaganda is that Iran's hostility and chance of death to America towards the United States has a lot to do with the fact that Jimmy Carter encouraged Saddam Hussein's Iraq to attack Iran, and Ronald Reagan provided the regime with the chemical weapons.
Jason, you know more history than Trump has ever said in his life here. Let me go back to Lionel here. This issue about attacking Candace Owen and Tucker Carlson, Alex Jones, and others here, what does he gain from that, Lionel?
Desperation.
I'm going to do it twice now.
Desperation.
Go ahead.
I have no idea. Now, this is something easy.
Lionel, I'm sorry I keep asking you hard questions here. Keep going.
I know. Ask me, you know, what is life? Is there life after death? How high is up? Anything but this. Here's the thing I want. From a, to use the old Bushian strategery, which, of course, he never said, but you had Pope Leo, and you had him, I don't want to say in your crosshairs, but here in the United States, for the most part, we're not too crazy about undocumented, illegal, alien swarms, whatever you want to call it. And Pope Leo, again, being the Pope, he has to say a certain thing was, let people in. So President Trump said, this is good. I can play on this. So are you advocating unwarranted, unchecked, you know, swarm? Okay, fine. That was great. He had him. And then this. Now people are saying, I forget what he said about this. Now Pope Leo, who, by the way, I always consider myself a retired Catholic, but with great respect for the institution, I'm still a member of the club, theoretically. He wasn't exactly the most dynamic. He was no J.P. Deuce. He wasn't, you know what I mean? So he's there. So he was getting a slow start. But now,
I agree.
Oh
yeah.
My God!
Yeah,
he has. We have. This is like the apotheosis. That, dare I say, the beatification of somebody who was marginal, maybe at best, in terms of. So what you've done is again unforced error. Why?
Yeah, Nico, let me go to Nico before we go to the break here. I mean, you know, this is a simple concept here: separation of church and state. Okay, Trump violated that, Nico.
Yeah, no, I think there actually is a strategy here being implemented. Mm. The midterms are coming up. Candace Owens has become the number one podcast in the world for criticizing Israel and all the wars the United States has been involved in because of Israel. Tucker Carlson, especially after the interview with Mike Huckabee and everything that took place before and after that interview, is now critical of Israel and critical of Trump and critical of Trump's war with Iran. And these are figures you need on your side if you want to win elections. Yep. That has become perfectly clear now. And his entire base is in trouble because anyone who is still supporting these wars for Israel that Trump is waging, or these conflicts on behalf of Israel that Trump is waging, Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson, possibly the two most popular conservatives, are against it, and they're criticizing them for it, and they can't win without them. Meanwhile, Ben Shapiro's show is plummeting in support. So Trump sees an existential threat, and the GOP itself sees an existential threat. And if they do lose the House and the Senate together during these midterms and lose gubernatorial races as well, who do you think they're going to blame, and do you believe Trump's ego can take it?
Well, I mean, obviously, that's one of the things I want to talk about in the second part of the program. I mean, as the midterms are upon us right now, you would think you'd want to be circling the wagons and trying to tighten up the coalition. He's doing the exact opposite. And I'm going to ask Jason that when we come back from our break. After that break, we'll continue our discussion on the Trump presidency. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the Trump presidency. Okay, let's go back to Jason in Prague. Already in the program, we've discussed the upcoming midterm elections and the state or unstable state of the MAGA movement. I'm not really sure it even exists anymore. Whatever remnants there is of that movement, it's on Twitter, and it's pretty transparently stupid, I must admit. But, Jason, let me posit a question here. Why should Trump care?
Well, the thing is that I don't think Trump cares about either the fate of himself or of his party.
No. He cares about himself, my friend. Okay, but let's focus on the GOP.
Of course he does care about himself, but in terms of electoralism and stuff, he does not care about the fate of his party. But also, I don't think that the Republican establishment cares either. In Trump's case, he knows that he is in his second term. And from my understanding, he is merely trying to build a legacy more than anything else. So for years, countries like Venezuela, Iran, and Cuba have been attacked, slandered, and lied about in Washington and the mainstream media. And it seems he wants his legacy to be as the man who brought all three under the umbrella of the U.S. empire the same way Bush had intended to do in Iraq and the seven countries that made up the five-year invasion plan that was revealed by General Wesley Clark. And he knows that the Republican establishment and even many Democrats are completely on board with this agenda. The D.C. duopoly, as I call it, has been exposed as a uniparty more than ever, both during this Trump administration and the previous Biden administration, as we saw with the Israel-Ukraine-Taiwan foreign aid bill of April 2024, and with a resolution in January, which saw a bipartisan vote of approval to continue financing the National Endowment for Democracy. So no matter who is in power, the military-industrial complex and the Wall Street financiers pulling the strings in Washington are the winners. But here's the thing. No amount of money, influence, or propaganda is going to save the Republicans from massive losses, both in the congressional midterms this fall and also in the presidency in 2028. Polling data, including one from NPR, which showed Trump had a minus 21 approval on the economy and foreign policy. So what we see is polling data repeatedly showing that the American people are sick and tired of their tax dollars being wasted on endless wars. So Trump is going to be remembered in history as this, I guess you could say, mentally unstable puppet who, despite promising an end to the neocon war machine, led America into yet another endless conflict while bringing about a long-term global recession, much like George W. Bush.
Yeah, but if we, using your logic, and I think it's very sound, then MAGA was just this huge deception in the service of the powers that you just mentioned here.
Lionel, it was. It absolutely was.
Okay, we're agreeing. Lionel, what makes Donald Trump tick? Okay, because I think his legacy, in his mind, his legacy is very, very important. We see, I think that...
Peter, can I answer for Lionel? I'm going to say it for a third time. I don't know.
I mean, thank you, Nico.
Maybe I should just retitle this program "Trick Questions" here.
I do know this. I do know.
All right, I won't. Okay, you guys have taken over. Go ahead, Lionel.
A couple of things. First of all, let's go back. Number one, Donald Trump has not lost his mind. He's not a psychopath. We love these terms. Everybody's a psychopath. Everybody's lost his mind. Everybody's crazy until they do something that you like. Remember, the Donald Trump, this contumacious, kind of obstreperous and classically, you know, rude person, was wonderful if he directed it towards people you don't like. Then you loved it.
Yeah.
Whatever he said about Rosie O'Donnell, we thought, this is terrific.
Yeah.
It was 4D chess. That's the guy. That's the guy we love. So that's number one. Number two, I want to change this to make Trump Trump again. When he stood up, if you want to cry, listen to what he said about foreign wars. Listen to his old mantra, his ideology about keeping America here. Make America first. Yeah! It's like, this is terrific. And then something, we say, wait a minute, hold it. Who's this? So when you say MAGA, and I never bought that MAGA thing, and it wasn't about him per se, but that was kind of like a shorthand version, but I know what you're talking about. But somebody's going to have to get to him and say, listen, we used to have an old thing where we'd say, take him to the mountain. We're going to say, let me explain to you your future. If you were to go out with a bang, what brought you to the dance, what brought you to the party was this incredible sense of this guts. And everything you said was, doggone it, he's right. Remember the old one, Peter? In your heart, you know he's right.
Yeah.
You know, Barry Goldwater said, you know it. He may not be. By the way, don't forget there was this SCTV line that says, sure, he's crazy, but what if he's right? That was another version of this. But what we need to do is to tell him, if you want to reconnect with the world, understand something. Be a diplomat. Pick your enemies carefully. Be gracious. They love to see you. When you embrace people and veterans, this is the Donald. He needs a pep talk. I don't know who he's talking to. I don't know if there's this fight between J.D. Vance and...
I think he only talks to himself. That's why we're in this situation.
No, he talks to one more person. I think that's why we need to acknowledge there is a clear difference between 2016 Trump and 2026 Trump. And the difference is Netanyahu. Because when you're making decisions that are literally contradictory to American interests, in fact, that you're making decisions that can ultimately destroy America as we know it, and it doesn't seem to benefit anyone but one country in particular, and that's Israel. He's not listening to anyone who's around him. There are generals leaving the staff and the administration every single day. Joe Kent, a veteran, left the administration saying that we're answering to Israel, and he gave us the answer to the test already. It's just that a lot of people don't want to accept it. They think that, oh, it's just Trump being a megalomaniac. It's just Trump indulging himself in his own ego again, but I think that is just cover for the fact that he knows that he isn't in charge of the decisions that he's making. And he's worried that we're all going to figure it out, even though the majority of us already know.
You know, Jason, Trump presented himself as the only guy that can save you. I mean, that was very much the message in 2016. A lot of people thought it was a bit dark, but a lot of, well, obviously, voters embraced it. And now no one's coming to save you. And I think this is an indictment of American politics in general. No one's going to rise up and save you, because what they'll do is they'll tell you what you want to hear to get elected, and then it just goes back to business as usual. I think that's a devastating effect on tens of millions of Americans that had hoped that Trump would be the solution to their problems. Jason.
Yeah, well, that's a common dynamic that always happens in American politics. We witnessed it with back in 2016 with Bernie Sanders when he folded and endorsed Hillary Clinton despite the fact that they rigged the Democratic primaries against him. You had AOC.
And what did Bernie get for it?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He didn't even demand anything. That's the thing. He didn't even demand anything. And you had AOC, who campaigned on bringing the ruckus to the Democratic Party, making the politicians uncomfortable. That was her big line. And then she went on to become a career politician who slandered and smeared the Force the Vote campaign on one of her signature issues, that being Medicare for All. She's voted for nearly every Israel and Ukraine aid package, and she has become so embedded in the establishment that Nancy Pelosi felt comfortable bringing her to the Munich Security Conference, where she gave an almost Madeleine Albright-like defense of NATO. The fact of the matter is that in the United States and in Europe, politicians are scam artists. And the only thing that separates a politician like Trump from, let's say, Zoran Mamdani is that Zoran can put on a smile on his face to mask the scheme, whereas Trump is open and proud about being a con man, and his biggest donors being Elon Musk, Timothy Mellon, Miriam Adelson, they all have very long histories of donating to the campaigns of Democrats and never Trump Republicans.
Can
like
I add
Bush,
to that point as
like
well?
McCain.
Can I add to that point?
Go ahead, Nico.
So yeah, yes, of
one,
course.
One administration in particular, Trump's administration is very reminiscent of in a very dangerous way, is Woodrow Wilson. Because Woodrow Wilson ran on what the first time? I'm not getting involved in that European war over there. And he gained so much trust from the American population that he won, again, handedly, and then immediately did what? Launched the United States into World War I under false pretense. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. Trump, go ahead.
Go ahead, Jason.
And I will actually add one more point, is that not only did he get the United States into World War I, he then started going after his opponents like Eugene Debs under the Espionage Act and the Sedition Act. The modern surveillance state is a result of Woodrow Wilson.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Lionel,
it's very similar to what we're saying right now.
We're rapidly running out of time. It's still early days, you know, to assess this administration. But what legacy would Trump like to have, and what do you think will be the result? Go ahead. You have about a minute and a half. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I got to say something to Nico and Mr. Zaharis. I have never seen such, and I'm not trying to say you're youthful, but you're not elderly. But I've never talked to anybody of such contemporary status as you. Bring up Woodrow Wilson.
Lionel answers, I echo his sentiment 100%. Go ahead, Lionel.
I'm thinking, my God, this is terrific. But is there a chance? Of course there is a chance. Remember a couple of things. America has the attention span of a gnat. Number two, America doesn't know anything. What we still live, I'm sorry to say this, we live by cable news. And whatever they say goes. And if you tell them it's raining and it's not, as long as your particular side, your particular cable station says so, you'll be able to believe that. Everything that I've heard, I've not disagreed with at all. I believe in simply this. It's about perception. And can Trump do it? Yes. But if he wants to change, it's got to be done now, drastically, and without delay.
Yeah, and maybe the price of gasoline at the pump, that will have a major impact as well. Gentlemen, it was a fascinating discussion. Too short, though, of course. I want to thank my guests in New York, Prague, and in Rio. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.